There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Well, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Hey, come out and see Matt, Jonah, myself do the Nerdist Podcast live in Texas. We're going to be at Fitzgerald in Houston. Then we're going to be at the Southside Music Hall the day after. You probably want those dates. Houston is Friday, July 20th. Dallas is Saturday, July 21st. You can go to Nerdist.com/calendar to get ticket links to those. And then come out and see us. Also, we'll be at San Diego Comic-Con on July 13th, so I'll just, I probably should have flip-flopped the order of those, but I'm too tired at this point to go back and change it, so this is the order you get. Check out our new show, Tournament of Nerds, on the Nerdist channel. Last week saw John McClane of Die Hard battle Captain America. Who will win? We'll find out this next week in this next Sunday's epic battle, Tournament of Nerds on the Nerdist channel. Click subscribe on youtube.com/Nerdist. I would like to thank Bing once again for continuing to support the Nerdist podcast. Thanks a ton, you guys. Let's say you live somewhere else in the country and you want to come see one of our fancy shows in Texas. Like, you want to go to Houston because you're like, I've never been to Houston. And why not go there during the hottest time of the year in all of recorded time? So you'd go to Bing, you would enter Houston, you're going to click search, and you're going to get a ton of results. You're going to get to see the flight selector, you're going to get price predictor, which is going to help you get the lowest airfare. Then, also because of the social aspect that's infused in Bing, you're going to see what your Facebook friends liked in Houston, hotels, restaurants, other places to check out. And because your friends are obviously people that hopefully you trust, and you don't have jerk friends, you know, some people have jerk friends. They're like, well, they'll sit on your face and fart a lot, but, you know, you gotta love them because you all grew up together. But let's just say they're true friends that whose opinions you respect. Then that's going to be very helpful for you in figuring out where to go, what to do when you're in Houston, Texas. And then once you get there, you can do the same thing for your friends. Post the places that you like. Hopefully one of those will be Fitzgerald's, where you'll see us perform the Nerdist Podcast on the 20th of July. So that's it. Bing.com. Click search. You're going to get a ton of results, and you're going to find out what your friends liked and get all social on that business. Thanks again to Bing for continuing to support the Nerdist Podcast. This episode is another one of the archives. This one should have gone out a long time ago. Damn you, Chris Hardwick. Why didn't you put out this episode with Fred Armisen and Gary Brownstein a lot earlier? Well, because sometimes I misplace things because I am not perfect. So that's, again, I apologize. This has been unearthed, and it's going up later than it should, and I'll refund your $0. Still a fun podcast, just because it should have gone up like 6 weeks ago. Come on! Why do I have these fake fights with the internet? I don't know, because I'm trying to predict what you're going to yell at me. So, there, I'm shell-shocked. Are you happy? I'm an abused, shell-shocked podcast host. It's your fault, internet. Oh, wait, internet, come back. I could never stay mad at you, internet. You're my best friend. I'm with benefits. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 227, with Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein of Portlandia. Still available online, by the way, so just because this isn't being dropped right when the new season premiered, you can still go watch it now and pretend, huh? You're welcome.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
There's that little solo, but...
Yeah, I mean, she'll come in at 6.
Great, okay.
What did Matthew Sweet and Susanna Hoffs do together?
They do these two albums.
Hop up on that...
These two albums...
Oh, good luck with that, Carrie.
Called... I'm gonna spit out my gum.
That.
Look at that.
Under the Covers. Under the Covers, volumes 1 and 2.
Okay.
And it's all these amazing covers. And it's so great when they sing together and play together. It's just like Fleetwood Mac songs, Sunday Morning.
I got to write that down.
Why don't you just record it for posterity? Then you'll have it for later.
Do you mean posterity? Or are you saying I should record it and that will plant seeds that will pay off later on?
It's going to grow.
We'll prosper.
It's so good. And I've seen them do it live, too, and they sound so good together.
Oh, my God. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Under the Covers, Volumes 1 and 2.
I like both of those people.
Oh, so much. Yeah, Susanna's going to do the show tonight. And
what?
What does the live show consist of?
It's like us talking, then like some videos from season 2, us playing music. We have a band. We have a drummer and a keyboard player. We'll do some songs from the show. And then like every city, we'll do like different covers that are appropriate to whoever's around.
Oh, nice. So what are you doing for Los Angeles then?
It's Susanna Hoffs is going to be that song Sunday Morning, awesome. And then Manic Monday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What,
and then New York is going to be Hugh Cornwell from The Stranglers.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, I love The Stranglers.
Yeah, and we're so psyched.
Golden Brown. Is he going to do Golden Brown?
He wants to do it. He's going to do it acoustically. I've been emailing
him. Oh, he is?
Yeah,
okay.
Just like a...
Great.
Yeah.
Are you going to deliver a pie to him while he's doing like a delicious Golden Brown pie, or do you feel like that's too on the nose?
You know, this is a serious operation.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And comedy is not in our... We're separating ourselves from comedy.
It's a good idea.
Anything with any content.
Yeah.
Content.
We're going to come out. We're just going to come out and just introduce ourselves and leave it at that. Like, hi, I'm Carrie. I'm Fred. This is the show. Leave us alone. Nice to meet you. Goodbye.
Which is, in a meta way, it's almost Portlandian.
It is.
In a weird kind of way.
Yeah. I like you using that.
Did you just coin a new phrase of comedy?
Portland. Adjective?
Yeah, I did.
Adjective.
Yeah.
I love Portland. Carrie and I were talking. I just went up there for just between Christmas and New Year's. I just went to Portland.
Like, man,
I did just to hang out.
Yeah,
That was it. Just to hang out.
It's like the best place.
Yeah,
and I don't think it'll ever get overrun with anybody because it's a little out of the way. It's like not that easy to get to.
You know,
it's like I don't know.
I always like how you think it's not that easy to get to, like compared to
San Francisco. Like I feel like San Francisco, you can get a flight from anywhere, or Seattle even.
Portland is weirdly hard to get to, even from Los Angeles. There's like you have to. I think it's pretty much just Alaska Airlines flights there.
There's some places where you cannot get a direct flight to or from Portland. That's true.
And you take it for granted because you're like, well, no, Portland. It's a major. Of course, everyone. And
New York is like a 7 a.m. or like there's like two flights that are like weird times that. You know, it's not convenient.
Maybe they do it that way on purpose. Nice. There really are some turbo hipsters in. I mean, it's shot when you start to see the hipsterisms mash up with like, okay, you have the mustache and the beard and the crazy shirt and the old work pants and the chain thing.
Like the Charlie Brown Doctor Who T-shirt. It's a mashup.
It is a mashup of like five sub hipster sets cut together. But I'd rather have that. I mean, like you know. In the South, you got rednecks. So hipsters, I welcome thee.
Fine by me.
How did you guys become,
We kind of just knew each other. We had mutual friends. And then I was a fan of Sleater-Kinney. And then I knew Janet Weiss, or I know Janet Weiss from the band. And I invited Janet and the band to come to an SNL in the early days, I don't know, 2003. Mm-hmm. And then.
Just to an after party.
Yeah.
We had a show in New York.
Yeah.
We just came to the after party.
And we became friends.
And you're like, hey, you know what? We should do a show about a subculture.
There was Thunder Ant first, right?
Yeah.
There was a couple, like, years, 5 years of just these little online videos. We didn't even have a website. I don't know what we did before we had a website.
What did we do, though?
I think we just emailed the video around to our friends.
So weird.
Yeah.
That's how South Park got made.
Really?
Yeah, it's like they just had
Spirit
a video.
Spirit of Christmas.
Like, oh, right, right, the Christmas one.
Did you ever want to really do acting stuff, or was it just sort of like, well, this is fun, and then now all of a sudden it's a thing you actually get paid to do?
Well, both. Actually, no. As a kid, I did want to do acting. Before I discovered music, I was like a drama nerd in school. I took improv, like and acting classes in the summers, and I thought I was going to go into that. And then I discovered music, and that just derailed everything else I wanted to do.
Fuck you, comedy.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it wasn't that. Also, I was not doing comedy. I was doing serious plays that my English teacher had written. Like, in the most
English teacher wrote them.
Hubristic thing ever. When, like, a teacher at school decides that they're going to write the play.
You might have to get just a little bit closer to the mic. What I wanted to hear what in the English teacher play was. What were they about? Were they autobiographical? What is your English teacher?
No, it was a period piece.
An English teacher in the 18th century.
Writing plays for his street urchin.
Going back.
Keeps on going back. Yeah. I played the sister of a bride. It was very Jane Austen.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's very sweet, yes.
Were they good?
No.
Okay.
They were horrible. I have pictures. Oh, there's a picture from it in our Portlandia Live show.
Yeah,
we include We include some slides to let people know a little bit about our background. See,
that was preparing you because we were just having the Downton Abbey conversation right before Fred got here.
Do you like it?
I haven't. I saw a couple episodes. My ex-girlfriend used to watch it, and my desk was in the den, and so I would catch pieces of it in the background. I'm like, wow, the Brits sure love the relationships between the classes as a premise.
You know, finding Bigfoot's on at the same time. I don't know why you're watching.
Did you guys watch it?
I watched the first episode right before I came here.
I watched the first episode. I loved it.
I liked it a lot. I was just telling Carrie, you turn it on, and then within the first minute, you're just kind of into it.
That and upstairs, downstairs.
It's the same premise, right?
And similar? Bigfoot, Smallfoot? Yeah. That one
Bigfoot, Smallfoot, yeah.
But what is that when something just works? Like, because I can't describe what rare. It is. It's not like there's any great story or murder mystery. I'm just like, have to watch. I think
it's a combination of just performance and good, you know, filmmaking and DPing. It's like a combination of those three things can just immediately just have you invested in something.
The actors too, like the main guy. I'm always right away. He's a guy.
He's been in a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah, I've seen him in stuff.
But I guess it's the same thing. It's like, you know, would you be able to give people the exact reason why Portlandia works so well? And like, oh, just every element just kind of works together.
We still don't have any idea.
Yeah, that's a hard question. Yeah, to answer.
You can't. It's a weird question to answer about yourself. But your show works. I mean, like I discovered it a couple episodes. Actually, I hadn't watched it. We did that panel together at South by Southwest last year. Mm-hmm. That was all about, you know,
synergy online.
Yeah, it was an online.
It was synergy online.
It was
vertically
about
integrating
that,
internet.
There's a lot of words like hybrid and
basically
two screens.
You get a bunch of people in a room and then you take something magical and bore them with how you do it. That's basically what I felt like I was doing. Well, there's then you this, and then that's connected to this. And
so what you're saying is there's no artistic value in it at all. Sounds like it.
No, it's just weird. It is weird to go up in front of a bunch of people who have like notepads and talk about, you know, like, and people are like,
there's a couple guys in this party of suits that's walking around that have notepads, and I looked at them. I don't know who they are, and I looked at their notepads to see what they had written down. One guy wrote down three words.
Synergy as three words.
Yeah.
It's like they're too old for a page program, and they look like their suits aren't great.
You guys, I'm not joking. That's them right there.
Yeah. there's like 25 people with suits and notebooks.
Luther King
Let's
Day.
Preface that.
They're going to demolish the building.
It's a working house. That's what it looks like.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what's happening.
They have a tape measure out. This will make a fine parking lot.
That's where the sauna's going to go.
You got to save the building.
They're looking in right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they are. They're looking in right now. We're in a goddamn fishbowl.
I just Instagrammed
the photo. Who's in the fishbowl suits?
You are.
We're watching you too. Oh, that guy just saw me point a finger at him.
If you want to come on in,
they're laughing at how they're going to destroy this place. Like,
oh, gotta put on a show to save the building.
It's so cute that they all think they're getting out alive.
This was them outside. I just took a picture of them. Like,
yeah, they really are.
It's so weird.
Yeah, and if you notice, they all have a singular mind. They flock the same direction.
Borg, Borg.
But something is going down.
Borg.
They're assimilating. You can't. This building has to be secured as a monument to Demolition Man, which is where
there's
this
no such thing.
What?
There's no such thing as Demolition Man.
No, there is.
Anything
can be destroyed.
No, but this. Yeah. Dennis Leary lived under this building.
Sorry, homie.
Nope.
Oh. Sorry. Devastating.
This is when Fred destroys Matt from the inside out.
Really Wait, sorry. The restaurant wars. Taco Bell's gonna win, right, you guys?
I remember before you did SNL, Fred, you would...
Yeah, we knew each other for a while, didn't we?
Well, because you did the Largo shows, the Monday Night Largo shows, and you were one of the people... It was so amazing to watch. Yeah, like everyone... You know, Largo was a very loose... Did you ever go to the Largo show, Carrie? It was a very sort of loose, alt-y kind of comedy. Like, you go up with your notebooks or whatever. But Fred would come totally committed in a as a character and never break for a second. That like everyone else is kind of knee-jerk reaction was to be like, oh, wink, wink, look at me, I'm being crazy. And never fucking once he committed. Your level of commitment on back then and on SNL and on all the stuff you do is so is such an education for anyone who wants to do sketch comedy.
Jeez, thanks. I love that scene. Like, I moved here to LA from Chicago, and that's where I heard that all that kind of stuff was going on. And I remember I used to go alone. I was like, I'm going to go check this place out.
It was
like Karen Kilgariff, Paul F. Tompkins, Patton Oswalt. It was so great. Such a tiny little place, too, and everyone was... I'd never seen anything like it, so I was like, I want to be part of this somehow.
What did you... Did you start doing comedy in Chicago before coming out here?
No, not really.
Did you come out here for that purpose?
I think I maybe more came here for that purpose. Like, I did some videos and stuff, but not really any kind of performance. And even when I was here, I didn't play any other places than Largo.
Was that before the South by Southwest?
It was after.
Okay.
So South by Southwest was like a sort of gateway to getting to do more stuff, and then... I was like, oh, I can move out of Chicago. And I'll just go. I love LA. So I was just like, I'll just go to LA.
Oh, the South by Southwest bit. That was like, was that Chunklet? Was that a?
It was 1998.
Yeah.
And I think Chunklet had a thing in there. I don't know.
Oh yeah, Henry Owings.
Yeah, yeah.
So you literally just, how did you get booked at Largo? Like, how did you?
I remember I went, and then.
Because that doesn't always work for people, just going to a comedy show and then getting to do
it. Flanagan just said, you!
I remember I met Lisa Langang.
Mm-hmm, who used to book it.
And Zach Galifianakis knew her, and Nick Swartz knew her. I became friends with those two, with Zach and Nick, and they were, you know, I just met her and just tried to get on. And she gave me some night, whenever.
Oh, I feel like I have this story. I feel like I'm having this memory of Zach forcing you to do impressions of all the other comics.
Yeah, did you, he's always pimping me out to do stuff like that.
Did you do like a Paul F. Tompkins?
I did Paul F. Tompkins on stage. I came out with a big beer. Really I am a grown man.
When you were, it was the Prince character I remember seeing at Largo.
I did it was a hybrid of like, because that was after 9/11.
Right.
And on the news, they would always play like really sad music. So I did a guy who plays that music, who like composes it, kind of like a musicologist. And I just based him on a kind of music guy, but he was kind of like Prince and kind of not.
How's the experience? How's it been for you on Portlandia, Carrie Brownstein? I mean, just in terms of, is it exactly what you thought it was going to be? Are you still enjoying it? Are you like, oh, I thought this acting thing would be fun, but it's just, I have to work all day.
No, I enjoy every minute of it. Well, what's the most surreal is that it's still just Fred and I. You know, we started out just doing these short videos, like we were talking about earlier, and so much of it, despite the fact that we have obviously a great director, Jonathan Kreisel, and it's a production now, like still at the core of it is us just like looking for these absurd moments and these weird sort of like awkward pauses and taking things off in these tangents for a long time. So that's the weirdest part of it, is that it still has the same kind of essential core. And I keep waiting for that, not for it not to feel like that, but it hasn't yet. We've only shot 16 episodes, so if I already was over it, I should be slapped.
Did Jonathan Kreisel direct all the second season too?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good idea that a lot of sketch shows never really attempted before. Like it always makes the sketch show better when you have a single director throughout all the different sketches and episodes, because it kind of gives it a singular voice.
But you know what's funny is I don't think of it as a sketch show. Even though I guess technically it is a sketch show, for some reason I don't think of it as... It's
a funny scene show?
It's just...
Yeah, it's kind of a sketch show. We don't really think of it like that either. I always think of it almost like we're just making really short indie films.
That all connect in some way.
Yeah,
like little stories kind of...
Which sounds totally pretentious. I don't know.
But that's indie what it is, though. It seems... It's not because there's no real punchlines to anything, you know, like... It's not that clowny.
No.
So.
What was the first, when you guys first started talking, was it Pasternak the one that brought it to IFC?
He is, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we pitched it to Broadway Video, and Andrew Singer is there.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that IFC was wanting to branch out and doing comedy. So Dan Pasternak was the guy he called and said, would you want to be, and then before we knew it, we were doing a pilot. And we didn't even know it would go beyond that. Like, we're still kind of like, wow, we get to do a pilot. And then that turned into a series. And I still can't believe season
tour.
2 is done shooting.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, you know.
Well, it caught on. I mean, I feel like it caught on pretty quickly with the sort of early adapter comedy nerds. Just being at South By, last year, which was still pretty early in your show, and people were shouting, "Put a bird on it," in the theaters, and that had just happened.
Yeah,
that was
pretty crazy. That was Carrie's idea, by the way, to put a bird on it.
That was a great one.
Oh God.
Yeah, I mean, it was just people always ask about that as if we like were a marketing team that came up with a catchphrase, but it was. I mean, that's just not how we. That's obviously, like, you know, people don't, you don't write like that. But it was just, it would just turn into this strange phenomenon. Put a bird on it. Someone walked by me the other day and just said cacao.
My girlfriend Deanna, that's what she says to our dog now.
So you're safe for
it's like when the dog is doing something like cacao, Ruby, cacao. Oh,
yeah. That's appropriate.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It means stop.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know.
You're gonna get a phone call from like the cacao industry. Guys, thank you so much. I mean, you have no idea. People just didn't use that word before.
There's a restaurant, I think it might be in San Francisco, called Cacao.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's a chocolate place in Portland, not named after the sketch, but called Cacao. Mm-hmm.
How long does your season take to shoot? I mean, you must not have
September,
a ton of time.
September?
I think it was actually 9 weeks of shooting. So about 3.5 days per episode.
And do you guys just, do you literally just write everything yourselves?
No, it's us and Jonathan Kreisel. We had a woman named Carrie Dornetto.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Allison Silverman writes some stuff. And then one piece was written by our editor, Doug Lussenhop.
Mm-hmm. Doug Pound.
Yeah.
Doug Pound.
Oh, nice.
He's an editor, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah.
The editor is like, they do so much for the show. It's crazy. They actually build things of things that we had thought would go in the garbage. Like, they really turn them into like cohesive pieces. The things that they do, they're really incredible.
It's amazing to me that anything. I mean, you have to get so lucky with who you pick, because there's so many places along the way where something can fall apart.
Totally.
That it's almost astounding that anything good ever gets made, because even if you have 90% of the people are amazing and then just like one
idiot editor
can just fucking ruin everything. No,
it's the thing that about it is also a little scary. Like it feels a little scary depending so much on these editors and John and stuff. It's just like, they're so good at it. Mm-hmm. And this is stuff that we don't do. We don't know how to edit, you know?
Yeah. But those guys have worked. We had worked with Doug on Thunderant. He was our editor for that. And then John and Doug had worked together on Tim and Eric. So there was already these like little, like this chemistry sort of between all the different like groups.
Yeah.
And I feel like John directs with editing in mind. Like he sort of knows like when we have enough or when to get more, because he sort of has that like shorthand with Doug. And so that makes it a lot easier, I think.
Yeah.
How many, are there a bunch of sketches that you still, is there anything that you feel like, oh, I just haven't been able to make this work yet that...
Yeah, we wanted to do something with public transportation. There's like trams everywhere in Portland, and it's very.
Stop with these guys.
We're gonna
that
find
guy
out.
Just peeked
who they
in
are.
Like a okay, child.
So the guy. So basically, just for people listening, there's a small that it looks like a ship's window in the door here at the studio that we're in, and there's all these weird suited people outside, and one like comic-y Asian guy. Comic-y like he was being a comedian. Yeah. Like he peeked up and then made this weird face and then like slid back down.
Oh, okay.
Like he was going down the elevator.
You want me to block the window?
just punch through it and be like, shut the fuck up.
This group of suits, it looks like something in a movie. Like if it was in a movie with business guys walking around, you'd be like, that's too unrealistic. People are more human than that.
Yep.
These dudes, short hair, not really smiling, they look like business guys.
I'm pretty sure.
Except for the one guy.
Except for Clowny. Yeah.
Except for that guy who's he's the life of the group. He keeps everyone in check.
Yeah, yeah, he's a riot.
Yeah, that guy's hilarious. He'll fucking put his face in any window.
Never bust.
He doesn't give a shit.
Why in this corner of the building too? They're like in every nook and cranny.
But Kiss FM is over there.
But I don't know what that's. I don't know if that's what they're here for. They were outside staring at the building for a while.
They're looking at stuff.
It's so weird. They were brought into the empty closed reception area.
What was that movie with Matt Damon and Emily Blunt where there's the
Goodwill Hunting?
No. Okay. The Adjustment Bureau where there's a group of people and they direct fate. Maybe that's what this is. These guys are out there directing fate.
And they only do it on Marvel.
And we're not supposed to see them. We're not supposed to see them. I don't think.
I thought this was a day off.
It should be.
It's a holiday.
Yeah, it is a holiday.
I just applied for this apartment. So I put in an application with the landlord lady, and she's this old woman from New York. And I put it in on Saturday, and she says, oh, you should hear back on Monday. And I
She's from Massachusetts?
No, that's New York. Hang on. It's a very subtle difference. So I say to her, I was like, oh, Monday's a holiday. She's like, is it? What holiday? Like,
Jesus.
It's Martin Luther King Day. She goes, oh, I don't think the owner celebrates. He's Orthodox Jew.
Oh, no.
But now, you know, you described her as an old lady. If she hears this, good luck with your chances on getting
Oh, my God, you're so right.
Exactly. Way in the podcast.
This very lovely, mysterious, pretty lady.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we do. Right. It's weird.
Play the game 24 hours a day.
We have this weird...
I'm not getting this.
When you look at the demographic, it's like it's mostly like, you know, nerdy young folks. And then landladies 68 to 74. It's just like a bulb.
Landlord lady.
Landlord lady. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a landlord lady. Mm.
Look at that policeman.
I don't think she's going to do it because she screamed when I hit the color button on her copier and it came out color with joy.
Wait, you don't think she's going to do what? Listen?
Listen to a podcast.
Oh, okay.
She didn't know her copier did color.
I don't understand printers very well. I can listen to a podcast.
Well, it says color and then not color.
And so, yet she's not celebrating Martin Luther King Day.
Well, good point.
I don't understand.
Let's all think about that.
Wow.
How long are you guys in Los Angeles
getting
for?
Heavy.
That's all right. I'll steer the ship away before we capsize in near Cyprus.
We leave Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
A couple days.
Have you been nonstop promoting the show?
Yes and no. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of like yes, but then we've had to do other things. I mean, it's not been bad. It's been fine.
It's been great. I mean, we just feel lucky that people want to talk about the show. There's never a moment that we take for granted where we think like,
bananas.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And also people are nice. Like every place we've gone, no one's, you know, that obtuse about it. I like saying obtuse.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
That's exactly where I learned that word.
Really?
And I'm just like, yeah. And it's just great. I think it's Tim Robbins.
Yeah, he says, you're being obtuse to the warden.
Okay.
And that's what makes him freak out.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm just like, that's so great.
Then he goes in the hole for a month.
It's better than saying confrontational or like pissy. Yes.
So why didn't you do your show about another city? You mean something along those lines? Would that be confrontational?
Ooh.
You're gonna do Chicago-ia? Or like I just like fucking start trying to pitch my own crappy versions?
Our idea is to franchise it out, make as much as we can, and hell yeah, hire two actors in Chicago. Come up with your own characters.
Flintia, Michigan.
Flintia, Michigan-ia. And then we'll just check out, make sure that they're not doing anything that we don't like. We know, pay them some pittance for acting and then collect the rest.
How is the show received in Portland?
Blue Man Group, in a way, did that. They just had their show, and then there's different franchises in every city.
The Gallagher, too, right?
Isn't there
a touring Gallagher?
The one.
Yeah, there's another Gallagher. Yeah.
You were in Blue Man Group, right?
Yes, sir. I played drums in the band at Blue Man Group.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in Chicago.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that. That is a thing about you.
That is a thing. Does Sudeikis ever get jealous? We talk about it all the time, because he tried out to be a Blue Man. He was
multiple times, right?
Yeah. Because he was in Vegas, and they had a Vegas show.
Isn't that the guys, though? They're in Vegas now? The Blue Men Group?
No. Actual guys
like
are in New York.
They never show
Chris
up to an actual show.
In New York.
They're like the Dread Pirate Roberts. They've retired to Patagonia, and they're living like kings.
They sort of check in. And
yeah.
But, yeah, they have a nice life.
Good for them.
Hell yeah, good for them.
Where did it start? Chicago?
New York.
Okay.
It started in New York. It was like a street performance group. And they just had this one performance thing in Central Park where they were going to do a funeral for the 80s.
Okay.
So they did a funeral for the 80s, and they dressed all in blue, or they painted themselves blue, and then that became this show, and this became this, and then they were in the Astor Street Theater and Astor Place Theater, and it became a thing.
Well, I'm sorry. Were you ever a full-fledged Blue Man?
No, I played in the band, which is like you're above the stage, and you're sort of lit by black light. So there's a drummer, a zither player, and a Chapman stick player.
Are the Blue Men actually playing stuff, or are they just...
Yeah. If you're not seeing the show, they play drums. There's a lot of drumming.
I know there's like drums with paint on it and stuff.
Yeah, but then they'll have like PVC pipes and that they extend to, you know, deepen the tone. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
If you're into
it. It's fully entertainment.
We should all go.
Do you want to?
Let's all go to Blue Man Group.
How important is the show tonight? Do you have to do your show tonight, or do you want to go see Blue Man Group?
We can hire some couple people. Come on.
4.5 hours to Vegas. Let's do it.
They'll just think it's you guys in character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy. Go to Silver Lake.
Guy. Yeah. Listen, I don't think that guy realized it, but when he poked his face to the window, he was auditioning.
Yep.
He made it.
Are you assaulted? You must be assaulted with people now. Being like, can I come on your show? I want to be on your show. Can I be on your show?
Yeah, but not in a bad way. Not never in an annoying way.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it an assault.
Yeah.
Or someone just grabs you by the collar, carrying me, like, put me in your fucking show.
But people have done it.
Physically molested over the show yet.
No, they've been what?
I mean, no one's like physically touched me to be on the show.
No.
I think just from a...
Jack McBrayer, though, that's how he was on it. He just last year asked, like, can I please be on the show? And we're like, okay.
Yeah, but we said, okay. It was more enthusiastic than that. Yeah.
It was more like, yes, when?
When?
Fine.
Here. Fine.
If you're going to be irritating about it.
Here's a wig. Go ahead. Do your thing.
I think, you know, you look at something like Portlandia, which is a show that, I mean, I don't... It would have taken someone like Dan Pastrnak, I think, to understand what the show could be. Did you ever consider maybe pitching it to a network, or was it just something that Dan sought out?
It just happened that way.
You know, like, Dan Pastrnak, the hippest guy we all know.
Yeah. It just happened. I mean, it's like, I don't know if it's laziness or what, but we just like, you want to, IFC wants to do it. Okay. We don't have that, you know.
Right. Well, but people aside from Dan that really got it was actually Evan Shapiro.
Yeah,
Evan's great.
Yeah, head of IFC, and he was the one, because we didn't pitch it as Portlandia. We pitched it, at the time it was Thunder Ant. It wasn't site specific. There was kind of a sensibility that seemed a little bit married to Portland, but we were totally willing to like to not shoot there. And it was Evan that said, no, it should totally, you guys should keep it in Portland. It makes it very specific. It has a certain color palette. And it's going to be a character on the show. Like, I feel like as a network, they kind of got it. And they sort of like kind of greenlit like the whole Portlandia thing, I think, came about because of them and Jonathan. And
it took them as well to kind of make it what it is.
Because I just assumed, oh, we'll just shoot this in L.A.
Yeah, we're going to maybe shoot it.
And it wouldn't have been called Portlandia. Obviously,
you were just trying to get out of Portland.
I thought I was going to get out, but I didn't. And then,
good news, you got a show. Great. It shoots in Portland. What was that last part? Yeah. What's the last part?
Yeah, but it was really, I mean.
And quickly, too. Evan was very, made it move along quickly. Because that's the other, we didn't have time to spare, really. So he, a month out of the pilot, they ordered the episode.
Yeah. And another thing kind of to what you've been getting at a little bit, Chris, like me not coming from like a specific comedy background or acting background, really. IFC sort of understood like the context that we both came from, and they knew of my band, and they had no desire to sort of, oh, well, okay, Fred's great, but we can swap you out with, you know, one of the, you know, millions of other like more famous, more, you know, talented comedic actresses. You know, they got it as like, this is a specific thing that you guys have. It's different. So everyone was just on board. Like only later did we realize how sort of lucky we were that it was just still going to be us, you know, that no one was going to kind of shake that up, replace us with better looking people.
They did not even suggest it. Same goes with jokes. Like, we need this kind of joke. And that, it was like, they kind of left us alone.
Yeah.
And see, once again, you let creative people do the thing that they are going to do, and it works.
Totally. And I'm not against rules. I understand some rules, but if you just trust them for a little while, I think you're in good shape.
Well, and it's, but I feel like the lesson to take away from Portlandia is that you guys were funny and you got to carry out the vision of your show. And still, I'm sure that there are other networks people trying to dissect and going, well, how did that show get popular? And it's like, well, because it's good. I don't know. Like, no amount of money you spend on digital marketing or whatever, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if the show is good, people will find it.
Thanks for saying that. I mean, I agree, but then I can't agree too much because I can't be like, yeah, well, it's great.
Come on, Fred. I've always known you'd be a nice guy. Be a little cocky for a second.
Well, I do feel very good about the show. I will say when I watch it, I go, I'm happy with that.
Does it sort of fill a different place in your brain from when you're going to do SNL?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because at SNL, a lot of it is in other people's hands, in a perfectly good way. But this, there's a lot more that we have to sort of look over. So, yeah, it's a whole different thing. And also, like, with SNL, there's the cast and the writers. With this is just Carrie and I, and then, you know, whoever else we're writing with. So that's where it's different.
What was your SNL audition like?
It was magical. And I really mean it as magical. My life changed that day. Like, there was two levels to it. I had to do it first at the UCB, where I got to meet Lauren. Mm-hmm. And then, so I did it on stage at the UCB. Then Marcy Klein called me in to do it at the studio. And even walking into the studio, I was like, I can't believe I'm in this. This is the SNL. And there's all these pictures of all the hosts that they've had and cast members. And the audition is where they do the monologue. So I had to do two characters and two impressions. and I just had a few things with me, and it happened very quickly. It's just Lauren and Tina and some producers sitting there, and I couldn't even believe I was there. And I got through it, and I did Fericito, I did the self-defense guy, I did Sam Waterston, and for some reason, Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel, I have no idea why I did him. It was, I think he was just around a lot or something, so I did him. And then on my way to the elevators, Marcy Klein, the talent booker, sort of pulled me back. She's like, can I talk to you about something? And that moment, I was like, oh, we're talking about something. So she pulled me away from everyone and was like, you know, that's when I kind of knew things were coming together. So it was great. I loved meeting Lauren, and it was crazy.
The self-defense character, you did that also in that Bob Odenkirk pilot Next, right?
Yeah, and Next is kind of what got me to get the audition at SNL, because that was like a sketch show that Bob Odenkirk did, and there's all these characters, and I had all this videotape of me doing characters. I didn't have to, it wasn't even at a club. It was like me in a studio. So thanks to Bob. I mean, he really... Thanks to him, I had like this tape that was like, oh, here's everything.
I don't know if you remember this, but I feel like I always used to bug you to do your Sam Waterston, because no one else does a Sam Waterston, and it's fucking awesome.
Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you call 911?
All right, I'm all right.
Gary, did you find what was the timetable like? We're like working on the Wild Flag album, but then still doing all the Portlandia seasons. Like, did you just do it in between, or were you writing along while writing music while writing the show?
Well, Fred's schedule on SNL kind of dictates that we have about 9 months when we're not working on Portlandia. It's less so this year. This year is a lot more blurry. You know, both of us are kind of going back and forth between two things, but. Basically, we recorded the Wild Flag album before we shot our first season. Oh. So Wild Flag sort of happened first, but then we weren't able to do anything all summer, and then the album came out in the fall. But anytime I was ever feeling like too busy, like Fred could always trump me. Like we wrapped on Portlandia, and Fred flew out the next day for the first Monday back at SNL, no day off. Ooh. Between one and the next. I had 2 weeks off, which to me seemed not enough time, but then it seemed totally luxurious compared to Fred's schedule. So we both are kind of burning the candle at both ends, but completely like happily, very, very happy about it.
It's a great album. It's really good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the music business now? Like, how have you seen it change?
There's a lot of things about it that I find incredibly exciting. You know, I think like the accessibility of music, it's, you know, like major labels, it doesn't really matter anymore. Like there's such a, it's such a democratic like system. Like some, you know, buddy with a basement mixtape can be as excite people as some, you know, major artist. I think that's pretty cool. I think it's harder to find like curatorial sources. Like you kind of have to find, there's so much music that it kind of decontextualizes a little bit. It's like, oh, music is from everywhere, so it's also from nowhere. You know, like there was like this moment where things were really like scene specific. And
yeah, there's no real any particular sound from any region.
Yeah, which I think is awesome, but then is also a little weird. It's like has this unsteadying kind of quality to it. But mostly I love it, but I have to find like places to trust. Like, you know, who is actually, who has good taste in music? What blog? Or it ends up being friends. Mostly,
yeah, it's,
you
friends
know?
Or I like the idea of being able to trust a label too.
Yeah.
Just anytime a label releases another band, to just be able to like, well, I'm going to go and check it out because I trust their judgment. And mm-hmm. that's usually, I like that a lot.
Do we even know what if someone said, because it's pretty clear like what 70s music is or what 80s music or 90s music. But if someone were to say like, oh, give me some 2000s music, what's that vibe? I would not know what
You start thinking like Outkast for pop music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even though that's from a few years ago.
And that's what
Gnarls Barkley, Outkast. And, yeah.
And that's what people, so. When people say like 80s music or, you know, 90s music or anything like that, they are really pretty much talking about the pop charts. It's like, because if you said, you know, 80s music to, you know, just anybody that grew up during that time, they might say, you know, like Madonna and, you know, stuff like that. But if you ask another person, they would say Black Flag and the Minutemen and then, you know, just like, you know, more underground stuff.
So wait a minute. Let me see if I understand what you're saying, Jonah. Are you telling me?
Don't make fun of him.
I'm not.
Easy.
I'm not.
It really just depends where you're coming from. It's all perspective.
Are you telling me that different people
See, that's there's a tone.
What?
You got a tone.
Are you serious?
And I hear where he's coming from.
Yeah. But wait.
That's why I presented.
I'm just okay. I just tore down his attempt at generalizing an entire decade of music.
No.
And now we're talking about two decades then, because you're talking about the 2000s and then these teens.
Right.
Right.
What's the difference there?
I thought people liked all the same exact thing. So you're saying that different people have different. Explain this to me, Jonah.
You would have to talk about pop music if you're going to talk about the sound of a decade.
The song Pop Music by Z?
You know what? arguably, yes. But first of all, by M.
M. God damn it.
Oh, fuck.
Trump card. Oh, shit. I thought I had armor on, but I'm naked.
Put the gun down.
It is M.
But we could also argue that we all like the same stuff. Didn't we? Because now, the further time goes, then we love it all.
That's
like,
true.
During the 80s, there was so much stuff that I'd be like, no way! And now I'm like, oh, it's all great.
Because it keeps you reminisce about
That's the one thing I hate about like growing up, like being really into punk, is just that you push away so much stuff because it doesn't have any kind of sound or ideal that you felt at the time. And then you go back, you're like, what was I fucking doing?
Totally. And it all becomes the same thing. Like, you mentioned Van Halen to me, and like when I was in high school, I'm like, no way. You know, but now I'm just like, it's the same as The Clash. Like,
exactly.
I'll just assume put either of them on, you know?
Really?
Without a doubt.
Even Sammy Hagar, Van Halen, you would put OU812, you would put on right next to Lennon Calling and be like, it's the same.
Well, my hatred for Van Halen was during their era with David Lee Roth.
I really thought you were going to say Gary Cherone for some reason. That's a very specific area.
In high school, it was like Joe Strummer versus David Lee Roth.
Well, yeah, no contest.
And I don't mean like in terms of loving a band, but in terms of iPod, like if I'm going to put something on, you know, you could just as quickly put on The Clash. I will always favor The Clash.
How did you have an iPod in the 70s? Yes. Am I not understanding what you're saying?
No, I'm saying today.
Okay, I understand.
So what your go-to is, you're less allergic to stuff. Back then, I was like, I'm not even Rush is another one. Rush, I will never listen to Rush. And now I'm like, oh, absolutely, I'll listen to Rush.
Yeah. Was it because of the people that they were associated with? Or
it's when you're in high school, everything is a fight. Everything is an argument. And the fact that they had long hair, you were like, against it. It was just like, you know, you just took sides for no reason.
Were you a mod kid in grade school?
It was punk all the way.
All the way, bro.
Oh, actually, I picked up the 7-inch from the song you did on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
That Drag City put out.
Yeah, thanks for getting
it. It's great. I had no idea that that came out, and I was at a record store flipping through records, and I was like, Fist Fight. Man, that sounds familiar. And I was like looking, I was like, man, I think I remember this band. And like, it, for some reason, just because of the packaging, the artwork, it was so realistic to be in an 80s punk record. Then it turns out it was from a sketch that Fred did on SNL.
It's so nice that you got it. Thanks for doing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's great.
That's got to be amazing that you both, like, just like side doors. I mean, you already had an amazing music career, but you had a music career before, too. But now you, because of comedy, you can, it's given you this platform where you can do all sorts of crazy stuff and not have everyone go, what the fuck is that guy doing? It's like, totally. Well, no, it's Fred. That's, of course he's going to do the drum instructor. Of course he's going to do, you know, like it's side bands.
Even, you know, I won't go into it too much. I was a Sleater-Kinney freak. And even like getting to work with Carrie, I'm just like, hey, I worked out this thing where I get to like be close to this band I used to love.
She's right there.
And still do. I know. But
she's right there.
She's not listening. But it's that kind of thing. And also getting to meet Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols and just get to meet people. You know, that's the other like.
His radio show is still good too. Sunday nights.
Oh, he still has it?
He took
Jonesy Jukebox?
He took Rodney and Bingenheimer's spot. They pushed Rodney even later now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Poor Rodney.
More tired.
Poor Rodney.
Hey
guys.
Here I am, 3 a.m.
Now he'll just always be on tomorrow.
You're tomorrow, Rodney.
Are you guys all from L.A.?
No.
I'm from Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah. You're from Hawaii?
Mm-hmm.
He's from Hawaii.
I'm from Boston.
Matt's from Boston, and I'm from Tennessee.
You are?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you're from Tennessee.
Yep.
When MySpace was a thing, I messaged you, Fred, and said, hey, I work in a funeral home. And then you told me.
When I was in high school, I tried to work in a funeral home.
What happened?
What do you mean you tried to?
You tried.
Like, I went to the funeral home and I knocked on the back door because I was like, how cool would I be if I worked at a funeral home?
Have you just seen Return of the Living Dead? You're like, I want to work with that guy.
It was the local Valley Stream funeral home. And I just knocked on the back door and this lady came out. She's like, yes. And I was like, hi, I'd like to see if I can get a job here. She's like, this is a family business. And that was the end of it.
What a bitch.
How cool would I have been?
That would have been.
Yeah.
Because this interview, I worked in a funeral home.
Whoa.
That's me.
That's what he did.
But wasn't that cool? It was kind of cool, but.
Come on.
Some of the stories are pretty
I'm downplaying it.
I like
some stories. Like, did you do embalming?
I did. I was a funeral assistant, so I did everything.
That's amazing.
You pick up, too. Pick like, up. There was that one about, like, there was the charred body.
Charred?
It was like a burned body, right?
Fire department calls you. You go. You got to do a removal for the coroner, right? You flip the guy over. Obviously, you think, hey, this guy died in a fire. Flip him over. Knife in his chest.
Isn't that crazy?
Then you got to go, oh, hey, guys, check this out. Then we go,
crime scene.
We'll call you back.
Wait a minute. Yeah. The fire stabbed a guy?
Yep, it did. It's sentient.
Well, I've been playing Skyrim.
I would stab myself if I was in a fire.
That's true.
You would stab yourself?
There's a fire!
Stab.
This is stop, drop, and roll, right? Yeah, yeah. Right?
Let him figure this shit out.
Oh, yeah, as a thing for them?
Yeah, yeah. He's just fucking
with it. I would so do that.
Really? I'm love going out painfully, man.
I would do a knife, I'd do a half-written note.
I think someone's watching me. Just create this whole...
France somewhere.
Just France.
You need to put a map on your wall with a bunch of pins in it.
They'd have to go to France. They'd have to look into it.
Duplicate a huge celebrity.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That would be fucking terrible. You really could do that to someone.
Richard Branson.
You can totally do it to Richard Branson.
That's a half-written note. Richard Branson was here. And please, please, this is real. This is real.
Find him, even if he's in space.
Yeah.
The hard part is making sure the note doesn't burn.
I love the idea that you were sort of committed to the idea of working in a funeral home, but you just tried the one. You're like, all right, well, I guess I'm not going
to. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I could have done. I mean, I went to the source.
Yeah.
Right, but there are other funeral homes.
There are other funeral homes.
Oh, right.
That's exactly why when I moved out here, I didn't bother.
I could have, like, filled in an application and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess
you could have applied yourself.
Is there an application?
But. My favorite name for a mortuary I ever saw was a Borthwick mortuary.
Borthwick?
Yeah, seems really cliche, like someone was trying to make it sound spooky. It's in Hawaii.
Wow.
And it was called Borthwick Mortuary.
Is that you doing an English accent, or is it...
I think that's the way you
Borthwick.
Have to say it.
Borthwick! Borthwick!
Yeah.
Is that in Downton Abbey, is that the funeral home?
That's Borthwick Mortuary.
Borthwick Mortuary. I think you should go work at a funeral home now. You could.
I could get you in. Very easily.
For a little while.
You could go work at the McDonough Funeral Home
in Lowell, Massachusetts.
I think I'd be good at being like, you know, like consoling people. Like the family meets me, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It was remarkable.
Oh, do Sam Waterston! And they just want you to do characters that you've done on the show.
I can't do comedy right now.
Yes! Oh, he would have wanted you to.
This isn't the time.
You know what character he loved?
I'm so sorry.
He really.
That guy did not make me feel better.
I would be good at it.
You probably would.
Yeah,
I was pretty good at it.
Wait, is this recent? This is a long time ago,
Like 5 years ago.
That is kind of recent.
It's pretty recent, right? Yeah.
How about
this? Do you have a different view on death?
Yes. Totally desensitized to it. Remarkably so.
This
is legitimate.
I want to be desensitized to it.
So do I.
But you're not.
No, I'm very scared of it. Yeah. Very, very scared of it. Just, very, like, can't deal with it. Like, anytime I've had people in my life or animals that are on their way out, I'm just like... They're already gone. Like, I can't go and do the goodbye.
It just got so repetitive to me that it became a thing when relatives of mine would die while I was working at the funeral home. I would go to the funeral and just, like, sort of be like, what kind of casket is that? Well, what are these guys doing? All right.
But that was a way that your brain.
It could very well be, but it is.
Just, it made it very mathematical and just, you know.
So if Jonah dropped dead right now from poison that I gave him earlier.
I always bring that up as a scenario.
I'm listening.
Then you would be like, and Fred and Carrie and I are like, Jesus fucking Christ, he's dead. You would be like, all right, let's.
I'd be like, guys, calm down. Fact of life.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Just off the top of your head,
yep.
What's some advice in general that you could give to people like, is there a thing of like, hey, don't drink too much? Is there like a common thing you saw that like, you know, it's a stupid thing that people do?
Don't fall on a knife.
Don't enter a nursing home because really, you're going to die.
Right.
That's like it. What?
Also, there are like rules that you see that we would say to each other. When we knew an older relative or someone that we knew was on oxygen, we would give them 3 months. It's like, oh, you're on oxygen. You get 3 months.
This doesn't sound like advice.
It's not advice, but this is still
don't be on oxygen.
These kinds of things.
But I do. There is something to that.
Yeah, there is.
Like for self-awareness, like maybe you know, because I think nursing homes could probably push you into thinking.
Absolutely, they can absolutely.
Do you think even just entering a hospital as an elderly person, like my grandfather was a doctor, and he never went. He always said, "I don't want to go to hospital." He's like, "When I go to hospital, that will be when I die," and it was just like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I think people have way more control over them dying than they think. Like, just weirdly, because it was so many times we would have someone hanging on, and then like their wife died, and then
a
week later,
my great grandparents who were married for 72 years.
Exactly, it's that.
They died within months of each other.
Absolutely,
that's very common, right?
Yeah, it just happens.
Well, they had a suicide pact.
That's why I think, honest to God, I think people say Steve Jobs was dead for a while, then they released it after the. I think what happened, because I worked at Apple too. I think what happened was Steve was just waiting for the iPhone 4S to be announced, see what the press was, and then he went. He let go.
I buy that.
He let go because that was his life. Was that job?
Yeah.
And his kids, but mostly the job.
Are there any like dumb accidents? You're like, the, you know, for example, like, is there like a lot of shower stuff? Is there a lot of like drinking stuff? Like,
we
drinking in the shower.
Here's the dumbest
dumb accident.
Here's the dumbest thing. Well, here's the dumbest.
Seatbelts.
What I saw more often than not was New Hampshire still not required by law to wear a helmet when you're riding your motorcycle.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, forget it.
Motorcycle, forget it.
It's like, why would you tempt anything in that respect? So I've, you know. The motorcyclist funeral homes, I've done a lot of those just because we knew Lowell's like right on the border of New Hampshire. And it just is like, why?
Do you have to make them up like, well, he's sleeping on his side?
Because
you
can't. That's a fun thing, too. Autopsied folks. Because if you die, there's a Massachusetts state law. If you die and you're under 50, you have to get an autopsy. Like, it's not normal. And if you die in a car accident, you have to get an autopsy again. So, like, they can find out if you're actually murdered and someone made it look like you were in a car accident, I guess. So like what a weird thing about when, an autopsy person's in there and you're moving their head, you have to be careful so their skull cap doesn't pop off.
Sure. Yeah. Well, of course.
But you have to glue it. You got to glue it. So you do pop it up. But initially when you're moving the head, you just don't want it.
Fred, you're fascinated by this.
This is a dark conversation.
No.
Sorry.
You guys, Portlandia is great.
In an interesting way.
I mean, okay, in a way it's a life thing. Cause I'm just like, there's gotta be way, you know, you can't control everything, but there's gotta be little things that like seatbelts or whatever.
Seatbelt, absolutely. Yeah. It's stupid.
It's all percentages, really.
Honest to God, I was driving here today, and I was like, my seatbelt wasn't on. I was like, I'm not going to die today. I put my seatbelt on while I was driving. I was like, why was
did you make a proclamation like that? I'm not going to die today.
Yeah. Like, said it to my tom-tom. Yeah.
Carrie taught me how, in New York, I've been lived in New York my whole life, and when Carrie came to visit New York one time, she put a seatbelt on in the taxi, and ever since I've been like, oh yeah,
we're I in know. A vehicle.
I always buckle up in taxis.
Yeah, that seems like...
They're the worst drivers.
Yeah, they're the worst drivers. Also, I always think in terms of statistics. You're saying, and I always think, like, because I'm afraid of flying, and but it's so much safer that the flight to New York is so much safer than the taxi, the cab ride from the airport into the city. I'm like, I have a much better chance of dying right now.
But you're afraid of, I'm guessing, you might be afraid of dread not dying, because it's a much more dreadful way to die if you're going down in a plane than if you just get fucking hit by a car and it's over. But I do the same thing. I buckle up in taxis, and when I first started going to New York a lot, I almost felt bad. Because I didn't want the taxi driver to think I didn't trust him. And then after a while, I was like, why do I give a fuck what this guy thinks about what will save my life?
They don't seem to care about us, so.
Yeah.
We must have younger listeners. Do school buses still not have seatbelts?
I don't think buses have seatbelts.
God, it's such a weird concept to me that they all...
Even after the movie, the Simpsons episode, the sweet hereafter.
Buckle up, there's no seatbelts. Well, then go limp.
So, basically, Fred, you are going to start a company called... Open Armisen, and you are going to console people. You're going to be a professional consoler.
Yeah, and the way I'm going to do it is, no matter what, I'm always going to act surprised. Even if I know it's coming, I'm going to go, what?
Right.
Oh, that's, I can't believe it. And then I'll ask for some time alone. Just so I feel the shock.
Wait, so you get time alone from the family.
Yeah.
From the person who's talking to me. I'm like, I need to sit for a minute.
Even if you just met them,
they're like, wow, he's being more dramatic than me.
Right. And then all of a sudden, they get put in a position where they're like, hey, buddy, it's okay.
Yeah,
you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this. I'm fine.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good tactic.
They feel strength in your sadness.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever do that in a relationship where you're fighting with someone and then they crumble and then you're like, aha, I'll crumble more.
No, I'm not that petty.
Okay, good. I'm just making sure that none of us have ever done that ridiculous thing.
This seems kind of manipulative and detrimental to the relationship.
Exactly why we've never have.
Chris,
I have brain gas. How many more live shows are you guys going to do?
We just added a bunch of dates in February. I think we have 10 more shows.
Really?
Wait,
tomorrow?
What's happening with SNL right now? How long are you guys off?
We're on break for a couple weeks.
Right now? I guess you are right now, but next week.
And then next week, I'm going to Sweden to promote Portlandia. And then two more shows, and then we do our dates. The other one's in
that
February.
Was not a surprising sentence. I'm going to Sweden to promote
I'm so
Portlandia.
Excited to go to Sweden. You have no idea.
Have you been?
I've always wanted.
Never. I'm so excited, I can't even believe it.
I've always wanted to go to that area of the world.
You gonna hang out with the International Noise Conspiracy?
I hopefully.
Listening again?
El Perro del Mar is from there too, right? That's that singer.
Yes.
I can't wait. Because it's fun to go someplace if it's for work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it must be nice for you? Because kind of like what you said, you know, on SNL, you're a part of this group, but Portlandia is just your voice. The two of you together.
It's the thing I love most. It's like, and I love everything I do, but like this is more like definitely a labor of love.
Is SNL as hard as everyone said? Like not, I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard this a ton from people who've worked on the show, but I hear a lot of people who are sort of ancillary, like, oh my God, it's so fucking hard.
You know, it's hard work, but in a good way. It's hard in the way things should be hard, but it's still fun, and I'm with my friends, and the writers, you know, I'm sure you know all the writers and perform. I mean, they're all funny, smart people, so it's like, it's not really hard, you know, as compared to working in other jobs.
Yeah, but I still think putting up a brand new sketch, an hour and a half sketch show every week.
Yeah, that's
brand new. That's without really being able to workshop it.
Yeah, it's a lot of humility goes into it, and but it's good work. It's like it's a good for a good cause, and it's never predict. You can never know how the audience is going to react. You never know.
Do you have?
There's no formula. There's no like, if I do this, it's going to kill. You never know. It's just
and it varies sometimes between the dress and the live show, right?
We've had stuff kill it. Dress goes on the air, nothing.
Also, there's that like disparity between like the studio audience, who's kind of a very specific demographic,
totally.
And like stuff that works in that room is not necessarily working on to the television audience and vice versa.
Yeah,
without a doubt. Because also the stuff I used to watch, when I watch tapes of it again, there's no laughing from the audience, and I'm like, oh, that did not do that great.
I
love it.
Are you able to?
You know, it's like that caveman, unfrozen caveman.
Unfrozen
lawyer.
Caveman lawyer.
Watch that again, and maybe my favorite sketch of SNL of all time.
Yeah. I'm not. I don't know about your waves.
Airplanes.
Your waves.
Simple caveman.
Fax machines. I think it's little demons
inside.
The one thing I do know.
That and I rewatched. I found online one of my favorite sketches, The Mimic, with Alec Baldwin. Do you remember that one? Wow. Where he's the guy. He's like a guy that helps solve crimes with his artistry for mimicry. He can recreate any voice or sound. And so when he does it, it just sounds like a lady's about to answer the phone. He's like, "Let me do it." He just goes, "Hello, I'm at the pier." This is like it's like a Simpsons bit, but I was like that's one of the all time best sketches. And I go back, and it's like silence.
Dead silence.
The only reaction from the crowd is when Paul McCartney comes on stage.
It's so crazy.
I feel like four times a year I have a dream where I'm on SNL and I haven't been to any of the rehearsals, and it's just live tell. It's just the anxiety dream. It's like the no pants in school dream.
Sometimes it's like that.
But what's going through your head when if you're in a scene and you know like, oh, I don't think this is really working. Do you just go into like, well, let's just get through it?
It's very bonding. Because you know you're like, we're always going to remember this. How funny is this that we were laughing so hard on Wednesday? But you just get through it. And in a way, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Because of stuff like Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer, you're like, at some point, someone's going to appreciate what this is or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're out there with your friends. By your scientists. Yeah.
How long have you been on the show?
10 years.
Oh, my God. Really?
How fast did that go?
Like, really fast.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you're a new person in my life, but you're not. I've known you for a while.
A long time. Well, we never hang out because you live there and I live here. And then you also live in Portland part time. And Carrie, I've only met twice. I mean, we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the one panel.
Yeah.
Just that one great panel.
Do you want to do more panels? Do you want to go around and deconstruct?
Do you want to go on a panel tour?
I would love to do a panel tour. We'll just go deconstruct.
Yeah.
What's your favorite character to do on the Portlandia? Do you have? Is that a dumb question?
Yeah, it kind of changes because we shoot like three different like sketches a day, and so it's like you kind of have to just be in love with the character you're in because it's like they're gone so fast. But in terms of like the ones that kind of leave like an indelible impression on me, there's this character Kath. We have these characters Kath and Dave. Like last year, they got incensed over a dog being tied up outside a restaurant.
Right.
This year, they went river rafting in the premiere episode, and they're one of those couples that like they kind of perform their relationship to other people. You know, everything's just like it's like a megaphone is just.
Were they the ones with the Sudeikis sketch with Colin the chicken?
No, that's Peter and Nance, who I also love. Okay. They perform. A lot of our relationships on screen are like couples that perform at being couples, which I think is a really common way that people interact with each other. It's like, oh, there's this element of our couplehood. There they go.
That's four of them. Those guys have been fired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe it's a reality eliminated. Show.
Pink slipped.
Maybe it's a reality show. With
no, it can't
suits.
Be in here.
The Apprentice is Apprentice.
On it seems like a reality show.
It
though,
does.
They're two.
Yeah, those are the first four guys to get cut.
They're gone.
I always just assume it's because the NBC and Comcast merger. Yeah. I always just assume that it's
of all business
that it's sort
come.
Of like it's sort of like Dark City, where the buildings kind of like smash together, and then people change identities, and they like. I always feel like it's just that process when you see shit that you don't understand is going on in this building.
The rest of them are just right there in the hallway again.
I also feel like this is a weird dream state we're all in, and we'll wake up tomorrow assuming different roles in this universe.
Right.
Because of a weird race of aliens who's using the substrate of our land to power their species.
Okay.
You trailed off there in the end.
Oh, that's my phone. I'm like, who didn't turn their phone off? Me, Chris Hardwick. Sorry.
I thought that's how you were answering your phone. It's me, Chris Hardwick.
Oh, I should totally do that.
You should make that your ringtone.
I should totally
who didn't
do that.
Turn off their phone. It's how me, Chris Hardwick.
I think it's a nice picture of you. That's nice. But the microphone's in your face.
Yeah, Chris's face. I'll take a picture.
What?
Of you guys? Okay.
Well, I should go over to Fred.
Wait.
Oh, that's cute. Okay.
They use Pano, the thing that stitches all the.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe in. Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
That's pretty cute. One, two, three. Oh, you're. Cute.
I was voice training.
No, I'm pleased. Always voice training.
I was in voice training.
That was a D.
The audience is going to love that picture moment.
I'll cut that out. I'll cut out the dead second. So the audience won't even know.
You're welcome, audience.
How fucking dare you, audience, try to kill a moment between me and Fred. We're just trying to take a picture.
Yeah.
Do you really have to be involved in everything, audience?
This show's not edited, right?
No.
Okay.
We go back and put in a bunch of hilarious sound effects. But other than that.
Okay, so there'll be like a little music cue while you walk over.
Yep. When we're talking about death, there's going to be a lot of horns and like bike horns.
Bike horns?
Bike horns, yeah. All
right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you.
Thank you. Any others? Car slam. Could you.
Oh,
stalling engine.
Busy Indonesian airport.
Submarine accident.
You heard it through the water.
Space submarine accident.
He's wrong.
Actually,
it
should have been
nothing.
Can't hear anything in space.
The people on this ship can.
Oh, shit.
Fuck you, Jonah. You just got
you.
You just got schooled. Fred just schooled you too.
Sound affected.
it was a great show. Sound affected. Yeah.
Sound affected.
Fred Armisen.
But it's sound affected. AFF. Yeah.
Sound afflicted.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We gotta pitch it to NBC.
How do you guys have time to do anything else? You don't really.
We don't. This is it.
This is it. This is our life.
Well, I think it's amazing that you even came in here today to do this podcast.
No, we're happy to do it. And we
love you.
Yeah.
I love you.
We're happy to be here.
We're not
complaining either when we say this is it. But that didn't.
Yeah, no.
I am genuinely a huge, huge, huge.
In a happy Huey Lewis in the News kind of tone.
Yeah. This is if
this is it.
That's if this is it.
Yeah.
They had a very healthy attitude about their own band.
They really
did.
Yeah, they're behind the music. It's the most feel good.
Yeah.
It's like we're a bar band who made it.
Yeah. There was very self congratulatory in every song.
So you don't feel like Slater takes any cues from Huey Lewis?
No, we took a lot of cues from Huey Lewis.
Please cover If This Is It.
But they were always a bar band.
We all kind of started bickering a bit, so we took a break. But we're also really good friends.
Yeah,
our kids are friends.
So crazy.
Or is it the bass player? Which one has the slick back hair and was always smoking? Is it the bass player?
No,
I feel like it's Bowser.
Sounds like the drummer.
He looked like Bowser.
I think it was the bass player.
It was the bass player. Oh. He's no longer with the band, and it boned me out.
And then because he was funny, like when they did the video of If This Is It, he was in the sand and he had the leather on.
Yeah,
in the sand.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's pretty far.
Oh, right. The news.
Okay, so you're going to start a professional consular service. You guys are going to cover if this is it.
Yes.
Matt, yep. You are going to get sensitized to death.
Oh, I don't want to. That's a terrible thing.
Yeah, no, well, it's, you've had
feel
enough.
It,
of,
feel it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of happy where I am right
no,
now with it.
No, you got to start feeling it.
Okay, if this is like a thing I need to do,
if
I'll
this
do
is it.
It.
But hopefully we'll see you guys. And again, Portlandia is amazing. And I watched every episode quickly on the iPad all at once. It was just like one right after the other.
Rock and roll saxophone solo bands.
Huey Lewis?
Except for the one that everyone went to watch in Lost Boys, which I guess was Joel Silver's idea of like what teenagers go to see is a guy in tights.
What about Jerry Rafferty's?
Oh, fucking love Jerry Rafferty.
That's out front, that saxophone.
Yeah.
Oh, what about Morphine? That's rock and roll sax right there.
I read, and I did not know this, but I read on Cracked, actually, which is a fucking great website, that the Steelers wheel stuck in the middle. I had no idea they were just making fun of Dylan. That was the whole point of that song.
I didn't know that.
They did this list of songs that...
Make fun of Bob Dylan?
No. They did this list of songs that were a joke to the writers... That everyone took, it's like they just didn't catch the joke.
What else is there?
I think Sweet Child of Mine was just like.
That was a joke riff.
That was a joke riff. He was just doing scales.
It sounds like a circus song or something like that.
And that's how Slash practices, though. Slash always will pick a scale that makes him stretch, and that's how he practices, and then he ends up. Finding riffs in there.
And then the part, I probably have talked about this in the podcast before, but the part at the end where Axl's going, where do we go? Where do we go now? Was literally just them going, well, I don't know where the lyrics go from here. Where do we go now?
Really?
Where do we go?
Did you see Bob Dylan on the Critics' Choice Awards?
Yeah.
Yeah. My girlfriend Dan, she's like, wow, Bob Dylan has become what Tom Waits started as. This fucking craggly voice.
Yeah. Oh my god. He sounds like he's singing with like a cup of gravel.
Yes, just exactly.
Gurgling with gravel.
He sounds like he is gurgling Clint Eastwood, who is blowing Christian Bale's Batman in his throat while he's
singing
trying to sing at the same time in a gravel
there.
Pit operated by Mr. Slate.
Bob Hoskins.
Or Kenny. Not Bob Hoskins, who would have made a great Fled Flintstone. Let it go, please.
John Goodman.
I'm not going to go back and fix that.
That movie you're going to try to go back and fix?
God, if I could go
it's
back and fix
TV
the movie.
Lately,
the Flintstones?
Yeah. Rosie O'Donnell and Rick Moranis.
As a couple. Oh.
Yeah.
Betty and Barney,
yeah.
There was only one Rosie thing. That, like, the Flintstones movie was so bad, and their one thing actually, the only thing that could have made it worse was that...
Rock Vegas?
No, B-52s? Well, no. Yeah, no. Hang on. When I went to watch Flintstones, the kid sitting next to me pissed himself, and it just started to ferment during them because his parents
laughter,
just didn't
right?
give
it
a
was
shit.
Just laughter.
That the kid. And there was nothing that was going to take you out of that experience, huh?
Poor dude.
It might have saved me from having to watch.
Oh, you left, right?
No, I kept, you know what it was? I sat there, for some reason I was more into the idea of staying and being indignant about it, rather than just leaving. I just wanted to stay there and be mad about it, mad about the movie, mad about the smell of cold pee, rather than just taking myself out of the situation and not dealing with it.
Weeda, you're grown up.
Well, thanks for being here, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Are you on the tweets? Are you on the tweets?
Yeah. Well, I am. Are you
I'm
fine?
Not really, but sometimes I'll forward stuff to the person who does the Portlandia tweets.
I love that because you could log in.
I know. I'm so... Yeah, I would just rather do it that way.
But it's funny. You'll take a picture.
Yeah. Send it to her. Send it to Melissa. She'll put it up. It's just easier for me.
Yeah.
To forward it to another person.
I can't write anything.
But you're an excellent writer.
I can't, for some reason, that's one, I have like a writer's block when it comes to that. Carrie does it great. You do it great.
You two don't even do it right.
I don't even know how.
I do it okay sometimes.
I somehow just upload drawings. I don't know how I do it.
With your mind.
But I got that 8mm app, you know?
That's fun.
So I've been sending little movies of
that. If you follow me at home, you'll see the picture of the suits. I tweeted that.
Oh, already?
Did you see
your Instagram?
Oh, good. Okay, good.
What suits?
The suits that have been here all day.
Oh, these suits.
The suits.
They're still there. Man.
What's your Twitter handle?
Matt Myra. All one word. MATTMIRA. It's not that bad. It is kind of bad. It is kind of bad.
That's how he introduces himself now. Hi, I'm at Matt Myra.
I will say,
that's not weird, right?
Sometimes I thought I was fun. Against it, but then I always go to it if I want to find out about other people.
Mm-hmm.
So IFC's like, we really need you to do this. And I'm like, why? No one cares. But then when I want to find out who's going on tour, I always check in.
Mm-hmm. And IFC's like, see Fred?
Yeah.
Not so crazy.
Yeah.
Are you at Carrie Brownstein?
No, Carrie Rachel, which is my middle name.
Okay.
That doesn't, I know, maybe it doesn't make sense. But yeah, Carrie Rachel.
It's whatever you want.
It is whatever
be.
I want. That's what I wanted.
Okay.
It was shorter. Brownstein is a long last
that's,
name.
That's your whole tweet right there. At Carrie Brownstein. Hi. Yeah. That's all I had room
that's
for.
That's all I've tweeted.
It'd just be shitty if that took into account your characters.
It does.
Oh, it does? Oh my God, I had no idea.
No, well, felt, if you're not, tweeting at someone, it takes it up. Okay. It doesn't take up, your own name doesn't take it up.
Okay.
Well, you still know how to use it, do you?
No.
Okay.
What is this? What are we talking about? I thought we were just talking about my name, you guys.
MATTMIRA.
The show's going on the internet.
Eight letters. It's very simple.
Enjoy your burrito.
That's bad, bro.
Thank you, man. How's you doing going on our set list for tonight?
Oh.
I just took the Seattle one. I was just trying to like.
Okay, great.
Also trying to remember the lyrics to Dream of the 90s.
Oh, shit. I know. I will remember when we practice.
I think we will because it's just like those breaks.
Dream of the 90s.
We do a live version of that song.
Do you have dancers come out?
Mm-hmm.
But I took elements of our set list from those two cities.
Yeah, those are Seattle and San Francisco.
But we'll put the Camille thing in somewhere.
Yeah. Do we need someone else tonight?
We might not. Good. I reached out to my...
me. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I'm just warming up my voice over here for
Wait
no reason.
Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
It gives me an idea.
What's that?
We can ask Amy Poehler.
Oh, that's... I don't...
No. She's in town with Golden Globes.
Anyway, I think there's enough there. We always go over on the other shows anyway. We'd be fine.
We're doing two shows in LA, too. Make it really short.
So where are the shows?
Echoplex.
The Echoplex.
Yeah. You're going to go back to the hotel for a second, right?
Yeah. I'm starving, so I want to stop and eat. And then I want to get a different jacket. I brought another jacket to play. Oh, then I got to get my bass.
I got to get my guitar.
Oh, yeah, the instruments.
We're gigging.
Yeah. Drums, keyboards, she's on guitar, I get to play some bass.
Do you have other band members? Or do you guys jump around?
Yeah, we have other band members.
Yeah.
It's a real operation you guys
Yeah.
do.
At first it was like, would you mind doing this one show? And then we're like, we gotta have, it just makes
sounds
so much
better.
Yeah. Much, much better.
Well, we'll see you at the Echoplex. This is gonna go up after that show.
Oh, I hope the reviews are good. Christ, as you died on the cross, please.
If anything.
I know you didn't help Tim Tebow, but come on.
Sports.
Oh, that was still recorded?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I haven't. Not now.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Bing. Only Bing now integrates information from your friends on Facebook and experts on Twitter so you can tap into their knowledge and opinions and spend less time searching and more time doing. Now, search goes social. Check it out at bing.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.